me. What do you want to do tonight?
The same thing we do every night, Pinky. Try to take over the world.
Show and don't miss a part. No eating, no drinking, and no pee in their pants.
Em 1967, o mundo começou, pelo menos pra mim. A minha história reduzida é mais ou menos assim, ó. Chora, chora. São Cristóvão, morador de Madureira, desde pequeno acostumado a subir ladeira. Me lembro muito bem do meu tempo de moleque, que sempre passava as férias no final do 77. Padre Miguel, sempre 10 na bateria. Saudoso mestre André, sempre soube o que queria. Futebol na rua F, no campo de baixo, você sabe. Meu de gentil, no esculacho. Eu andava pelas ruas vestindo meu bate-bola. Se eu passasse em minha frente, era melhor tu sair fora. Carnaval de rua, perigoso e divertido. Mas passei por tudo isso, entre mortos e feridos. Graças a meu pai.
Welcome everyone to the Mad About Football show here on here alongside everyone at World Football Daily. I'm Juan Arango alongside the usual suspects, Mike Lopez and George D. Metellus. What's going on, gents?
What's going on, man?
Another good day.
Whoa, Mike just came out of the. He just came out. What's up, guys? Yo, what? Yo, is a beer? Is a beer? Only have beer?
What happened?
No, I'm saying Mike came out and he's like, what's up? You know, like that. I was like, whoa, he's excited to start the show, man. What's going on?
If Thursday. Be more monotone.
You want us to
No. Just it's good. It's good to have the energy. I'm actually praising him. He sounds like energetic, you know? Or is it because they're talking about Boca being involved with the MLS team in Miami?
Now that's news. I didn't hear that.
You know.
Well,
I thought the MLS team was going to South Beach.
Oh, you're right. Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, come on. They, you know, they got to take their talent somewhere. Of course, they're going to be playing MLS at Flamingo Park. You know?
Oh, I thought they were going to build a little 2,000 seat, you know, metal bleachers right on the beach.
That's between Flamingo. Yeah. Yeah. Or over in the No Holler Zone.
You don't get it. They're building the stadium inside of Liv.
Oh, that's what it is.
That'll bring in people.
Yeah.
That will definitely bring in people here. I mean, going to Club
Liv. Is this where David Beckham is spinning?
Yeah.
Oh, dude, that would that's be hilarious. Epic, man. That would be epic if you see those guys, if you see those people doing that shit. That would be awesome.
Yeah, for real.
I mean, I'd definitely buy season tickets to hear those people say that.
She is David Beckham's.
Come on, Mike, honestly. And yeah. If MLS comes to Miami, you got to have a dance club at your stadium.
Oh, absolutely. Man.
Come on. Yeah. The Marlins have it.
They have the Clevelander. Absolutely. Sun Life Stadium integrated at one point. Well, I think it was Liv, too,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it was Liv.
Yeah.
They still have it, don't they?
I don't think so.
Oh, man. Did you remember?
No, they haven't.
You remember that we went to a game, George? I forgot which one. And we were in the press box, and all you heard, or was it with you, Mike? And all you hear was unch, 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 unch.
Yeah, like, it was. Was it the Messi and Friends game?
I think so. Yeah. I hear it is. It all you heard was like, you know, we're like, it's like the funny part. They put that club right next to the press box.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, I haven't been to Sun Life Stadium, or at least to that part of Sun Life Stadium in a long time. Actually, that was probably the last time out there. And
same,
yeah, I tell you what,
here.
Since the Dolphins have been doing pretty bad, well, at least for South Florida standards, which is, you know,
very bad.
Which is not undefeated.
Uh-huh.
But there's not many fans going out, so I'm not sure. You know, and they're not getting any primetime games either. So
yeah, they might have shut that.
At least last season they didn't have any primetime games, and you know Miami's all about the limelight. So if there's no primetime games, then
no, that's not worth going.
They're probably struggling. Live at Sun Life Stadium,
and of course the Clevelander too. I mean, I went to a Marlins game, for like $5 for like five bucks.
Why did you go to that?
My daughter, dude. Oh. She wanted to go, so I took her. $5, man. We're sitting right next to the dugout.
That reminds me of the old Orange Bowl during hurricane games. Me and my brother, we would be students, and you would get in, and then we would, if it was a crappy team that we were beating, because back then hurricane football was good, like in the early part of the 2000s.
Hey, listen, right? Listen, Stephen Morris, Duke Johnson, watch out.
Yo, I heard Stephen Morris ripped it up at that Manning passing camp or whatever. He ripped it up.
You mean that the one that the other dude overslept in?
Yeah, Johnny Manziel slept in. Yeah.
Johnny Football?
Who cares, man?
No, but going back to the stadium thing, when me and my brother, we would go to the games, and if they were playing Rutgers or some crappy team, we would actually walk through on the Orange Bowl. We would be in the student section. We start in the student section, and we'd end the game like on the other team's sideline right in front of their cheerleaders. That kind of sounds like what's going on in Marlins Park. You could just sit wherever you want because it's so empty.
Yeah. Well, you're absolutely right, man. I mean, we sat there and we missed a foul ball by like that, you know, by very, very little.
The Marlins, they make a lot of signings. They finish last, and then they trade everybody away, and they finish dead last.
Yeah. So, but it's all good. But I mean, you know, that whole thing with Miami, that sounds interesting. But let's see what happens. I mean, it's still a rumor. Supposedly, City of Miami and Angelici were negotiating to get involved with David Beckham and with
Look Loud. If it's in Miami, you're supposed to say supposedly.
Yeah, because you never know what's true or what's not.
No. I don't think you get it. In Miami,
supposedly,
most people say because supposedly, bro.
Supposedly, that's what
supposed to be. Proper English is supposedly.
Right. When you know how to speak English, it's with a D as in dog.
Yeah. Instead of right. B as in,
burro or something.
That's perfect.
B as in beach.
As in burro, beach. Yeah, of course. And the thing I found out was because I got an article, and I put it up on Facebook as well, about an article that came out of the Miami Herald today, an opinion piece more than anything else, saying, hey, we need to have the stadium on South Beach. I'm like, the Miami Herald put that.
Where are they going to be? What's the perfect place for a stadium in South Beach? Where there's
Mike, you just said it.
I can't even park my car there. You want to put a stadium there?
Mike, yeah, for real. George, remember we went to that event with Swole?
Oh, yeah.
You got there. I couldn't park, so I went back home.
On a Saturday?
On a Saturday. Impossible.
Impossible. It took me an hour to find a parking spot.
And now with Alton Road, that they're doing construction on it, half of Alton Road's parking spots are just wiped out.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're telling me that you know, it sounds like a viable option for MLS to go to. I mean, come on. I mean, you know, in the worst, you know, if it's some guy from Podunk, Missouri or something like that, and he's writing the article based on his opinion from Macy's over there, that's fine. But this is a writer from Miami saying this.
Yeah, should know the area, yeah.
You know, I'm like, come on. I mean, the best option, and it's probably the best of the worst, it's the least worst option, I guess I could say, is FIU.
I don't mind a team in Miami. I actually would like a team in Miami again for Major League Soccer.
Yeah.
But in South Beach?
Come on, for real.
It's not even realistic.
Who are you going to attract? The tourists?
No, people go to South Beach to get laid. They don't go to watch, you know, pay $50 for a soccer game.
Right.
You're going to drink and you're going to get laid, dude.
You're not going to build up a Miami fan base
by marketing South Beach tourists.
Because by attracting tourists,
which is pretty much what Miami markets to as far as events are concerned. I mean, I had right by my house, I had a plane, you know, flying across with a banner talking about the ICC, you know, the ICC championship.
Oh, you want to talk about how that's going to be I don't want to say it's going to be a disaster, but they're already screwing up with that marketing already. But we know that's commonplace.
You only see banners right in front of the American Airlines Arena.
Or downtown, exactly.
Or downtown, or the Coconut Grove. That's the only area they market in. I mean, they don't go outside of that. And I think I want to start, you know, talking to some of the people involved with the project and say, hey, you know, are you marketing like in Kendall, in Little Haiti, in Hialeah, et cetera? I mean, I don't want to get too local, but it's just something that's kind of laughable in my case.
Well, and, you know, people don't understand, us being Miami natives and South Florida natives, people, South Florida natives, the only ones that go to South Beach consistently go there for work. You know, the only real South Florida natives that go to South Beach consistently is for a job. You could walk down South Beach right now and 30 people, you ask.
You mean to tell me that locals don't go out to South Beach to go out?
Of course they do, but not every weekend. Not every weekend. You could go to South Beach right now and you talk to 30 people, and all of them.
One out of every, you know, five people you see are natives over there. I mean, I'm talking about the ones that are just hanging out. I'm not talking about the ones that are working. That's a completely different demographic.
Oh, yeah. But I mean, most Miami, the real Miami heads don't go to South Beach every weekend to party.
Not anymore. I mean, when I was in college, this is like 10 years ago, I mean, a lot of locals were partying out Miami. But the thing is that the whole tourist market actually drew away a little bit, at least for the, you know, for the entertainment nightlife aspect of it, you know?
Yeah, of course.
A lot of people are in the Brickell area, in the downtown area.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's what it is, you know. And I mean, George and I used to go a lot to South Beach back, you know, but back when we were in college. But it wasn't, you know. But now it's like, oh my God, you know. I mean, you go to, you're like, where is it? It's in South Beach.
Not that much.
Oh, what? What are you talking about? Not that much.
We went every once in a while, but we didn't go.
We weren't there every weekend.
He's not trying to look like Johnny Football on the show. That's fine.
Johnny Football.
Yeah, of course. He's like, I didn't go to South Beach with you. Stop it. Stop doing that.
But I mean, going back to the stadium thing, it's just a ridiculous notion. Everybody thinks that the whole of Miami is centered on South Beach. Like, South Beach is the center of Miami.
South Beach is, what, 8 blocks wide and, like, 20 blocks long? I mean, that's what it is.
Like that's the whole epicenter of Dade County, and it's not. It's not
Miami. It's a little island, yeah.
Exactly.
It's Miami Beach, to be specific.
Right, exactly. So they need to get that out of their head, man. And I'm telling you.
Especially ESPN, when every time they referred to the Heat, they referred to South Beach. Obviously, because LeBron, when he made the decision, said, I'm taking my talents to South Beach. He's really taking his talents and took them
to downtown Miami.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
You gotta right. Hey, man. Anyway, we've been rambling.
Coconut Grove? Yeah, or something like that. But
yeah.
Anyways, we got to talk.
15 minutes about anything and everything but soccer. Well, except for the David Beckham thing.
No, we're talking about MLS.
Because 5 hours ago you were telling me that we're going to talk about Copa Lib, and then we're going to have the guys from the Mexican soccer show to talk about.
What's the rush, man? God.
All right.
Man, God.
So
I mean, going back, but Copa Lib yesterday, we got off, but no problem. Copa Lib yesterday gets started. Tremendous environment over at the Defensor del Chaco. And I'm telling you, if there's a stadium I would like to go to in South America, I mean, there's several. That's one of them I wouldn't mind having a stop in. It's a gorgeous stadium, but yesterday, electric atmosphere. I don't know if it's one of my top five, but whatever. I don't think people really care about that. Great environment yesterday, and Olympia won. You think they won justly, or do you think that they were very opportunistic as far as being able to get the result?
I'm going to go with both on that one, but they were very opportunistic as well. I mean, the second goal came literally, bro. We also say that in Miami.
Literally,
bro. The last goal came on the last ball of the game.
Yeah.
That was a
last
sweet
ball, and what a sweet touch on it.
Yeah, that was just beautiful, man. I mean, Wilson Pitoni with a beautiful strike to make it 2-0. Now, a couple of things need to mention.
He scored on a free kick to eliminate Santa Fe, right?
Pretty much, yeah.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, in the first leg.
Now, and this is just me tooting my own horn.
So I think it was opportunistic. But Mineiro, at least in the second half, I wasn't able to watch the first half. But the second half, Mineiro had, I think, two clear chances to score. And this is with Ronaldinho playing like crap.
Yeah, he played.
Matter of fact, he was substituted with like 10 minutes into the second half.
Yeah, like around this.
Yeah,
which is still like that kind of caught everyone by surprise, including myself, because you'd figure that even though he's having a bad game, you keep him in the game.
Yeah, and you got when he was walking off, he kind of pulled a Kobe Bryant.
Coach. Yeah,
he pulled a Kobe Bryant to Mike Brown. Remember, Kobe kind of gave him that dirty look when he.
How dare you?
Yeah, during a game.
He did that to Kuka, when, yeah.
Yeah, he did the same. Ronaldinho did the same thing to Kuka when he was subbed off. So
yeah.
Well, there's some speculation as to maybe there's beef before the game. I don't know. You know,
I don't think so, man. I don't think so. I mean, you got to give a lot of credit, too, because, you know, guys like Mansur, Miranda, Aranda also in the middle. I mean, they did a tremendous job of shutting Ronaldinho down. I mean, yeah. he really didn't. I mean, on top of having a bad game, he was forced into a lot of mistakes, too. I mean, he really didn't have much time. They just collapsed all over him, and that's pretty much what they did. And Luan also was another factor. I mean, you didn't see him do much, and they missed him a great deal as he was replacing Bernard. But the team's slow. I mean, but if you look at it, since the quarterfinals against Cholos, Atletico Mineiro have not been playing very well.
Yeah, they've been very lucky, especially on the road. I mean, they went down 2-0 to Newell's on the road, and you know, obviously they're down 2-0 here. I think they are a little too confident going, okay, we'll maybe take it easy. I'm sure they're playing hard, but it's just not the same energy as when you go home. Mm-hmm. And so maybe they thought, okay, we'll play hard. Whatever happens, happens. They may be a little too nonchalant. Diego Tardelli missed like two chances to score a goal, which would have been huge. And
man, there was one play, and I forget who the
I think it was Barreiro, right? Or Salgueiro.
And the second half, yeah, that wide open goal, dude. And he kicks it out of bounds. I don't know if you remember the play I'm talking about.
It was wide open. I think it was Barreiro that missed it.
Unbelievable, man.
Yeah, no. But still, I mean, you know, the first goal was kind of sweet, too. Seeing him moving around. But also, yeah. Richarlison.
The Silva goal.
Yeah, Richarlison got in the way of Victor. I think it was Richarlison that was in there. And Richarlison, of course, he'll be missing the second leg of the final as he got sent off. But this team, I mean, they're really in disarray. And we mentioned it on the show, and it was more of a passing by kind of thing that we threw Olimpia in there in the mix, because during the group stages we talked, hey, this team, you know, looks kind of they're under the radar, but they're a team that really could do some damage. And I forgot, I think it was you, Mike, that mentioned them really quick. Again, we didn't mention them, you know, we weren't, you know, spending 15 minutes on Olimpia, but I think it was Mike that mentioned it, saying, hey, you know what? This Olimpia side looks pretty solid, and damn, look how far they've gotten, too.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're the traditional Copa Lib.
Yeah, I think...
side, you know, and it's really, really, really difficult to get some kind of a positive result at Defensores del Chaco in that stadium. And I think Olimpia obviously really took advantage of their, of their fans and their rugged style of play. It's not the most, it's not the prettiest style of play, if you will, from Olimpia, but very aggressive in their nature.
Yeah, and of course they put all their guns into the Copa Lib basket, because in the domestic league they ended up in fifth place with 31 points last time around. I mean, it was like
15. Oh, you make it seem like, you know, how they finished second to last, putting all their eggs in the basket with Copa Lib.
During the break, during the Copa Lib break, that's when you start to see them get their results
Fifth place for Olimpia is disappointing when you consider their history. I mean, they're either
just like second to last is disappointing for Boca.
Yeah. Yeah. It's championship or bust with Olimpia. It's Olimpia, Cerro Porteño. Those are the two big in Paraguay.
Yeah,
so,
of course, Libertad and Nacional won the title this past semester. Right. So, I mean, you know, I mean, take it with, you know, however you want. But, you know, this team really did very well in their group. I mean, it came up in first place. They absolutely smoked Newell's Old Boys 4-1 at the Defensores del Chaco. But, and this is me again just tooting my own horn, back in 1989.
I was going to ask you about that.
Olimpia had a 2-0 lead.
Was it Olimpia?
They had a 2-0 lead going into a match against Nacional, who were not playing in Medellin, by the way. They played that final in Bogota.
Okay, yeah, I was going to ask
they
you.
They pulled over a plate?
No.
You know worse?
Oh, you're talking about Olimpia? Yeah, of course. Like, they pulled it. Yeah, big gallinazo right there, man. And, you know, they ended up losing at El Campín Internacional 2-0. And, of course, they went to penalties, 10 penalties, which, you know, of course, many are saying, oh, that game was robbed because, you know, Nacional, you know, ripped them off because of Pablo Escobar and this. I'm like, I'm sorry. If you're getting robbed, you're going to get robbed during the 90 minutes, not going into 10-11 penalty kicks.
And it's not Yeah, and it's not uncommon. I mean, for a team, 2-0, we always say it all the time. 2-0 is not a safe lead by any stretch of the imagination. And even during a game, at the end of a first leg, 2-0 is not safe. You have to finish off a team at home. And Olimpia didn't quite do that.
And their goalkeeper?
Martin Silva?
No. In that 1989 final?
Higuita, right? Yeah, was it Rene Higuita? Yeah, Rene Higuita, yeah.
Yeah, Higuita, but the goalkeeper for Olimpia,
Almeida, yeah. He's the all-time appearance leader in Libertadores,
yes,
if I remember correctly.
Yes, he still is.
Yeah.
And later on the following year, of course, they end up winning that title. But just a little tidbit to find out that not all is still lost for Atlético Mineiro, based on history, I guess. But
well, I mean, yeah, especially recent history. You're talking about they came back against Newell's in the quarters. I mean, in the semis.
Mm-hmm.
So
of course.
They can score.
Do it. Yeah, they can do it. I honestly think so. But,
Were able to shut down Joe. They were able to shut down Diego Tardelli. Missed opportunity. Ronaldinho didn't play too good.
And Soglo Luan, man, he didn't do anything.
Yeah, exactly. So, Olimpia. I think nobody was talking about Olimpia because they're Paraguayan team. Even though they have, they've won it three times,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, this is number four, man. Yeah.
But because in recent history, the Brazilian teams have dominated and the Argentine teams have dominated, people have gotten forgotten the Paraguayan sides. And then finally, you know, Olimpia comes through. So.
But the Paraguayan sides really haven't been protagonists, you know, this deep in a tournament since Olimpia back in.
Since Olimpia, what was it?
Yeah, 2002. I remember going to the game in 2002. When they played Boca over at La Bombonera, and I think it was Nico Burdizo that knocked the ball in. God, I want to say it's Nico Burdizo, but I'm not exactly sure. In that match, I don't remember. Ended up being 1-1. Then Boca lose over at the Defensor del Chaco, and then you know Olimpia end up playing Sao Caetano, and they end up winning their third Copa Lib.
Whatever happened to Sao Caetano? Where are they at?
They're like in the second division in Brazil.
Yeah, they're like they might even be third division in the Pauli in Sao Paulo state.
Yeah, thing. I'm not 100% sure. I think they're first or second division in the Sao Paulo.
Tournament. Right.
But well, guys, I mean, it's exciting to see. Next week we'll sit back and wrap it all up with Copa Lib. We'll see what goes on there. Also, before we go, congrats to Corinthians for earning their third Recopa title, as they were able to just pretty much, you know,
they brush off
Sao Paulo, and congratulations to them. Also, thank you. No need to applaud. Thank you very much. As Atlético Nacional win their 12th league title, ladies and gentlemen, the winningest team in Colombian football.
Oh, yes, now they're the winningest now, right?
Yes.
Now
in the overall titles, 19.
19. Okay, 19 so they passed titles. Millonarios now,
yes,
right?
Yes.
That way, overall.
Is it Millonarios
titles,
before
include...
them?
Huh? Does that include Copa
no,
Lib?
No, domestic.
Oh, everything.
No, all time. Okay. Everything. Yeah, everything. Everything.
Oh, you're
talking about everything.
Okay. Remember. So they passed. Who did they pass? Millonarios, right?
Yes.
Okay. So who has the most domestic in Colombia?
Oh, Millonarios.
Millonarios.
They have 14.
But and Nacional have how many? 12?
12, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, so Santa Fe in Spanish.
Actually, they're in about 20 minutes or so, I think, in Colombian TV, they're going to be showing that game again.
So, ooh, cool.
Yes. You know, cool. But hey, there's very few places in the world you want to be, because you know, when Nacional win titles, the ladies come out, man.
Oh, man.
I need to go to Medellin now.
Yeah, you do.
I need to go to Medellin right now. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Olimpia's the only Paraguayan team to win it. So they're really carrying the hopes of a whole nation. When it comes to
I don't think so.
I don't know.
Yeah, of course, you know.
Oh well, I know they hate him. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's like you hear it's like hearing a Boca fan go River, win it for Argentina, yay! No,
well,
fuck
I mean,
that.
if enough, but they're the only Paraguayan team that's ever won it, so there's a little bit of national pride there. You know what I'm saying?
Mike,
so
Mike,
yeah, if, I don't think
Mike,
it works like that,
Mike,
man.
It don't work like that in Argentina, but in but if you only have one club like that's won it.
Trust me, it didn't work like that in Colombia.
Well, Colombia has more than one team that's won
For almost 15 years, there was one that only had won it. So, yeah, no, and nobody was saying, yay, go Nacional. No, crazy.
Well, more than one team. How many Colombian teams have won it other than Nacional and Once Caldas?
That's
what
too.
I'm saying.
You make it seem like there's like five teams that won Copa Libertadores.
No, no, quite the opposite. I'm making it sound like...
No, I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to George.
No, I'm saying Olimpia. No, my point is that Olimpia, they're the only Paraguayan team to have won it. So maybe they're kind of carrying a little bit of the flag of Paraguayan football and some national.
All right. Well, maybe if you're a fan of Tres de Febrero, I can understand that comment. But if you're a Cerro Porteño fan, I don't know about that.
Okay, then that's one team. That's their arch rival, but maybe the rest.
What about Libertad, man? I don't think Libertad are just like, yay,
okay.
Go.
Okay, so that's two teams.
And I don't think or Sol de America or Rubio New or Nacional or any of those teams are going to be like,
Sportivo Luqueño.
Yeah, I don't think any of those teams are like, yay, Olimpia, good for you. You won another title. Come on.
Now the media might be a different story in Paraguay, but I'm not sure about fans of other teams. I don't know. Whatever, man.
I wasn't thinking about fans of other teams.
I think Juan just made that noise again.
People, but,
George.
But I think sound like a dog sneezing.
That was my dog sneezing.
Oh, okay. Season two.
Actually,
okay.
Well, let's take a break because when we come back.
Well, wait a minute. Who you got for the second leg?
Who we got for the second leg?
What do you think? What you got any predictions? We got predictions from the
Colombia
panel
football?
About the second leg? No, man, for the Libertadores
you
final.
See, you see how George, do you
in
have any
Belo
predictions
Horizonte.
For the second leg?
I think Atlético Mineiro is going to come back and win it.
Yeah, I think Atlético Mineiro will win it, but will it be enough for them to overcome? I don't know. Maybe their luck runs out now against a team that looks to be more practical and looks to close their ranks a little bit easier than the others were able to. We'll see. It all depends on who scores the first goal. And I mentioned it yesterday when I was talking to over on World Football Daily. I said, hey, who's going to score first? And it ended up being Olimpia, and they're pretty much behind the eight ball. If now Atlético Mineiro come out with all guns blazing and start pressuring, I do see a 2-0. I do see it. But I don't see Olimpia giving it up that easy. And I don't see it at this point being the factor that it once was in the semifinals.
How huge would it be if Atlético Mineiro come back, man? They come back and win this thing. I mean, you want to talk about a rocking atmosphere. That Independencia Stadium is going to be.
They're not playing at the Independencia.
Oh, it's going to be at the Mineirão?
Yes.
Oh, even better. Even better.
I don't know about even better because they wanted it at the Independencia. The Brazilian, the CBF made a petition to CONMEBOL to go and say, hey, you know what? We want it at the Independencia. No, stadium's too small.
Yeah, yeah.
Remember, you have to have more than 40,000 for a final, and the Independencia is 24 plus.
Right, because that's América Mineiro Stadium, so it's not even,
yeah. So
second division side stadium, but it's beautiful, nice stadium.
Yeah, it's a gorgeous stadium, but the Mineirão is a brand new one too. They use it for the Confederations Cup.
Well, one thing I know you guys like Libertadores more than Champions League, and the one reason that. You can make an argument for the two-leg final is because of atmospheres like you saw in Asunción.
Of course.
Because of that. I mean, when you have it in a neutral site, it's always an intense atmosphere, but it's just not the same.
Oh, no,
when
no,
you're
no,
at
no,
your
no,
home
doubt about
pitch.
It.
It's not the same. So there's the argument for that, that atmosphere at the Defensores del Chaco and next week in the Mineirão. It's going to be amazing. Yeah.
We'll see what goes on, man. But now we definitely got to go take a break because when we return, we're going to start talking about Liga MX, or should I call it now Liga Bancomer MX, as Mexican League begins this weekend. See if America will be able to repeat or, will there be somebody else? And we'll be talking with Tom Marshall and Johnny Rico of the Mexican Soccer Show, which they'll also try and explain a little bit more in a more rocket science type of way what happened in Mexican football, because to this day I don't know about you guys, but I'm still confused.
I have no idea. The only thing I know now is just where the country is in the cities. After that, I'm lost. I hope they can explain it to us.
Okay,
go to the break. Let's go to the break.
Let's go to the break. Okay. You hear the nights are light with me. All right, we're back here on the Mad About Football show, and I think we'll be talking a little bit of football as well as some rocket science as well, as we're joined by none other than Johnny Rico and Tom Marshall of the Mexican Soccer Show here on World Football Daily as well. Gentlemen, what's up? And we needed to get some intelligent people on the show, so we decided to get you two on.
Not very bright of you.
That's why I'm saying we're looking for intelligent people. Now, because first of all, George, Mike, and I still have not figured out that whole entanglement that's Mexican football now. So let me get this straight. Querétaro ended up in relegation. They went down, but they really didn't go down. So they're still in first division, but they were supposed to go to second division.
Right.
Now, Veracruz is in second division, but really in first. How does that go? I mean, I'm like completely confused.
Here's a quick summary of all the moves. It all happened actually with good intentions. Mm-hmm. The owners decided, because Carlos Slim is now in the Mexican game, that multi-ownership is no longer allowed. So
convenient, huh?
Yeah, in order to make Carlos Slim the bad guy, TV Azteca said, you know what, we got to sell Jaguares de Chiapas, our second team. They also own Morelia. Mm-hmm. So since Jaguares de Chiapas was up for sale, the owners of Querétaro, who were relegated, they rose their hand first and said, yeah, we'll buy that franchise and move it over to Querétaro. Mm-hmm. So since everyone saw that moving franchises was now on the table, the recently promoted La Piedad, mm-hmm. they sold their franchise, and that franchise got moved to Veracruz. Mm-hmm. So now Veracruz has a first division team, and of old San Luis team, they weren't having a good time in San Luis, so they saw an open market at Chiapas, so they moved their team to Chiapas, you know, the team that Tev Azteca had just let go. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like they didn't disappear, but it's all the players that used to be San Luis, which was a really horrible team.
Look, is there like a little song you can make up so we can kind of like, you know, make it a little bit easier to understand? I mean, like when you're learning the capitals of the states, you can do the little songs and stuff.
No, that's a lot of capitals, man. That's like 50 capitals, man.
Yeah, but can he do like a little song? Hey, Veracruz.
A better example is like remembering like the colors of the rainbow.
I'm sorry,
the colors of the rainbow. You come up with a thing, Roy G. Biv, you know?
Yeah, that's something like that.
The closest song there is the musical chairs song.
Oh, okay. I was never good at musical chairs. I was always the one that they slipped the chair out from under. So.
There you go.
So, you got me stuck there. So, gentlemen, I mean, any expectations, of course?
So basically.
Go ahead.
So basically what it was just a bunch of, because you can only, every team has one owner. They basically just did, like you said, musical chairs. One team moved to another city and took the name of the club that used to be there. And so is there a purpose? I mean, this might sound crazy, but is there still a purpose to relegation and promotion if you're going to just be able to buy the team that moved up?
Your
idea of that? Because
completely demeans
it. In a roundabout way, it's kind of like MLS. You buy into the first...
Yeah, no, I think it completely demeans the relegation.
In a roundabout way, it's similar. So, what's your guys' take on that?
Yeah, I mean,
do you even have to play for relegation promotion? Yeah.
I mean, I just think it demeans the old. I mean, we covered, you know, the relegation battle and all that stuff last season, and you know, Querétaro went down in the end. The next thing, you know, they just buy the team that's gone up, or you know, the way it works is that they get the spot back in the league. So it's like, well, you know, what was the point in that, really? You know what I mean? I mean, there's a lot of like politics going behind it as well, in terms of like a lot of these owners are trying to get like the state governments to, you know, to pump money into it. I mean, the one team I really feel sorry for, and the one city, is La Piedad, who is, you know, from Michoacán, a state that's been really hit with the drug violence and stuff like that. You know, the fans of that team were just like, you know, really properly, you know, celebrating the, going up into the first division, this small town of, you know, a couple of 100,000 people. It was like just a massive event. Then 3 days later, the owner of the team decided to sell it to Veracruz. And it's like, you know, I think more than anyone, you feel sorry for those fans who have invested the time and money into, right, you know, supporting their team. I mean, more than anybody. I mean, it's just demeans the whole system and fair play in the end of the day.
Yeah, all in the effort to pretty much, you know, kind of shun one person that decides to come in, you know. It's like...
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing. I mean, in MLS, like, whatever you think about, you know, not having relegation, I think you can understand it, you know what I mean? You understand the reasons behind it, mm-hmm, and you can agree or you can disagree, whatever. But, I mean, Mexico is a country with, you know, a rich and long history in football, mm-hmm, you know what I mean? It doesn't need... It should be the best teams. Whoever can put the best teams together deserves to go into that top division, full stop. You know, there's no... For me, it's quite obvious, but, I mean, obviously there's a lot of stuff that goes on, in dark corridors and stuff in the Mexican game.
Yeah. I mean, let's talk a little bit more about the upcoming season, because one of the most important things, and of course, I got to see the final of the Mexican Clausura with some foreigners, and they're like, wow, Mexican football is very exciting, especially watching that final where Moy Muñoz is scoring the goal that ends up taking America into extra time and eventually into penalties. Right. Now, what's going on as far as these teams? I mean, of course, you see teams like Atlante that are making moves. Atlas right now is in an economic upheaval. I mean, you don't know what's going to happen with them. They had issues with sponsors. You had issues with them. Those clubs, like the Atlantes, the Atlas, others, and such clubs such as them, what's going on there? What's going on, especially, Tom, you being in Guadalajara? What's going on with Atlas right now, especially?
No, Atlas is just a joke. They've got, like, 124, like, board members. Most of them who aren't interested at all in the club. So to get anything done is difficult. Basically, they're running at a loss, and they're, you know, somebody has to put in money at some point. They owe the players still a month and a half. What actually could happen, I mean, there's only a day till the season starts, so I don't think it is. If the players go to the league and make an official complaint, then Atlas won't be able to start the season. That's wow. How it works out.
And why haven't they done that?
Because there's this negotiating. Difficult to explain, but they're negotiating with the team. They're kind of trying to individually go into the players and say, no, we'll give you a pay package, and, you know, we're going to structure it to these, you know, this is when we're going to do it. And, you know, they've also asked the state government now for quite a lot of money, mm-hmm, to try and to invest, and saying, you know, that if Atlas goes bust, then it's, you know, bad for the city, and, you know, they provide, you know, positive things for the city. I don't know. So Atlas, basically, at the end of the day, what needs to happen is they need to sell, and somebody needs to come in. I mean, it's a great institution. It produced so many top-class footballers over the years. They'd be a real shame to see it.
Sounds like they need a union. Sounds like the players need a union.
Yeah, I mean...
Has there ever been talk about that in Mexico, about a players' union?
Yeah, I mean, like Nery Castillo came out when he was signed for Vallecano. Spain, and the first thing, you know, he came on ESPN the other day, and he was just like, you know, players have absolutely no power over there, and he basically said, look, I wasn't going to accept how they do business in Mexico. Luckily, I had an option; I could come to Spain. But I wasn't going to accept that a director, you know, the owner of a club, was going to tell me I have to go to that club. You know what I mean? Like the kind of whole, you know, Pacto de Caballeros.
Right.
So he basically came out. I mean, players now and then, and Chaco Jimenez as well, has come out. You know, we need a union, we need to protect our rights and stuff like that. But, I mean, it's definitely something that needs to happen, and it takes, you know, it's going to take a few of these experienced players to really get together and stand up and look after the young ones coming through.
Yeah. Hey, John, Tom, go ahead, Juan.
No. I was just going to say, yeah, that's it.
Oh, all right, well, just to kind of start touching on the actual upcoming Apertura tournament that's going to start this weekend, actually. Do you see America repeating, going back-to-back?
You know, I hope they do, but I very much doubt it. I'm a really big fan. I just up and left San Diego and went over to Mexico City to watch the entire playoffs at Azteca.
Wow.
But but I highly doubt it. They lost Diego Reyes, very young, talented defender to Porto. They lost Chucho Benitez to a no-name club in the Middle East.
With a lot no-name. Of oil money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I...
Juarez is also out, right?
Yeah, but I think the U-20 squad is going to miss him more than the first team.
Okay.
So yeah, no, those two key players leaving. I don't see Luis Gabriel Rey scoring the amount of goals that Benitez did. They also have the CONCACAF Champions League to juggle in there. I can see them probably winning the Champions League more than the Apertura season.
Mm.
Wow.
That would be huge.
I do have a question regarding Atlante, but I'm going to say that one for the end.
Because okay.
Especially a little bit of humor.
You must be thrilled that Pato Rodriguez signed with Atlante, right?
Me?
Yeah, you, of course. You know, you being, you know, closet Independiente fan. Especially now that they're...
Oh, yeah. I'm climbing the walls of my house because of that sign.
Well, since we're still talking about Club America there, Johnny, there was actually a Twitter question that came out from Andrew Bustamante. And he's pretty much asking you, does Benitez's departure from America affect their performances, or will Mina be able to fill the void nicely, or fill it, period?
No, Mina definitely not. Mina, I don't know what they saw in Mina. I guess he scored a lot of goals in Ecuador, but he hasn't even been able to score that many goals in the Copa MX against second division Mexican teams. He's looked pretty bad in preseason. Mm-hmm. Though the two guys that could probably carry the team scoring-wise will be Raul Jimenez, who's currently with the Mexican national team, and Luis Gabriel Rey, the veteran Colombian. Mm-hmm. But I don't think those two will get to anywhere near what Benitez did last season.
Do you think that Luis Gabriel Rey will be at least equaling what he was able to do in Morelia? And if he does, do you see América having a chance then?
Yeah, I see América in the top three of the league table. They want that because this is a Libertadores qualification season. Mm-hmm. So top three goes to the next Libertadores. I can see América in the top three and bowing out in the semifinals or losing the final of the Apertura. And I see the Champions League just a little more easier than the Liga MX.
Is that their priority? Is America's priority the champions, the CONCA champions, or are they still focused on domestic? What's been the talk about that?
The America pride will never allow them to say, yeah, we prioritize one tournament over the other. If you ask anybody in or around America, they're going to say we need to win every single trophy. So it's not very clear.
Mm. I like that attitude. It's
spoken like a big club, man.
Yeah, that's the way you're supposed to do. Big club, you go for everything all the time. All right. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Now, in thinking about what's going on, you heard Bio Herrera talking about, you know, how this team, you know, it's now his team fully. I mean, especially having a couple of seasons under his belt. Where do you see them at the end of the season? Do you see them actually winning the title, or you see them top three, semifinal, and that's something pleasing? Or where do the fans see America, and how different do they see them compared to the previous semester?
I see a disappointing top three finish and semifinal exit, because as a fan of a big club, everyone's gonna want that repeat championship.
Yeah. Speaking of disappointment, Chivas was a pretty big letdown in the last tournament. How do you see them bouncing back in this tournament?
Yeah, I mean, I reckon Chivas are going to do a lot better. I think they've got a base to make the playoffs. They've had a good preseason. They've gone unbeaten. You know, Marco Fabian's playing well at the Gold Cup. Aldo de Negres is in there. You know, that's given the whole club and the atmosphere around the club, you know, just a big boost. And, you know, I was up there the other day and, you know, Dennis DeClos is up there and he's chatting with the press. And I don't know, it just seems like, you know, the whole, like, atmosphere surrounding the club is just a lot lighter now. And, you know, Galindo's had a full pre-season, you know, to get stuff going. So now, you know, he was saying in his press conference the other day that he knows the younger players now. You know, obviously he's got his established you know, regulars. But, you know, hopefully he can kind of gel the two a bit better than he has done. And I think as long as they don't have a big injury crisis, I think Chivas are a decent team. I think if you look at the spine of the team, they've got, you know, a lot of good players. Are they the same quality as Tigres, Monterrey, Santos, America? I don't think so. But, you know, at the same time, I think they're, you know, they're going to be challenging for the playoffs.
Who else do you see in the picture? Do you see a Cruz Azul without Teo Gutierrez? Do you see Pumas, who have made a little bit of noise so far in this offseason, getting Ariel Nahuelpan? Who do you see also being a contender? Also, and that'll lead me to my next question, but I want you to answer those teams first.
Yeah, Cruz Azul, I think, are going to be up there. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that, I mean, if you look at the squad on paper, I think the, you know, possibly you could argue the best, you know. I think the other ones are the northern teams, like I mentioned, Santos, Tigres, Monterrey, Tijuana, you can put up there as well. All just got loads of money behind them, mm-hmm. always going to be strong. Johnny, I'll leave Pumas to you.
Yeah, Pumas struggled last season scoring goals, and they still managed to make the playoffs. And that was the first semester that the coach, Antonio Torres Servín, had in charge of them. So it's going to be his second season. I think he knows what his club needs, and I think he went out and got it this summer. So I expect them to have a decent season, make the playoffs again, maybe a little higher seed than last season, but not challenging for the title.
Actually, I was going to ask you, Johnny, speaking of Pumas, having Servín in the mix, having a player, a coach that, you know, is familiar with some of these players, of course, having been a coach at Pumas Morelos just pretty right. much a couple of semesters back, how important was to keep him on board to establish that continuity leading up into this tournament, obviously leading into the playoff run that they had last time around?
Yeah, no, Servín came and turned everything around. I mean, Pumas was a complete disaster with Mario Carrillo two seasons ago. So Torres Servín came in last season, kind of got the club back to its identity, which is their youth system. He's a youth coach himself. Mm-hmm. So he knows what needs to go on in Pumas, and he's shaping the team kind of back in form. And with 6 months under his belt, I feel like he's going to just build on top of that.
So we're here with Johnny and Tom. Sorry, George, here with Tommy, with Tom and Johnny here on the Mad About Football show. George, you had a question?
Yeah, I'm still very fascinated with how everything shook out with the teams being the relegation, the promotion, the buying of the clubs and everything like that. And so Veracruz, are they going to be battling relegation? What do you see for Veracruz? Because since they are recently promoted, quote unquote, do they have a chance? I mean, any team usually in recent history in Mexico, a team that's recently promoted makes the playoffs, makes a deep run. You talk about León a couple seasons ago, and even Tijuana. Do you see the same for Veracruz, or what's your outlook for the Red Sharks of Veracruz?
The Red Sharks.
Hey, you know what? Hey, Mexico's got really unique animals. I mean, it's got red sharks and black lions.
Yeah. For real. Dolphins on land, delfin. Yeah, man. Cool.
Owls, got it all.
Yeah, the owls, yeah. Pecos, yeah.
Veracruz, I mean, I think they spent a lot of money. You know, Angel Reyna claimed that he had 13 clubs after him. And the end of all that, he picked Veracruz. So, you know, I think they must be offering him a decent amount of money. Luis Tejada, obviously from Panama, you know, if he finds his form, I think he's, you know, Veracruz have got a really good chance of doing something pretty good. Whether they can reach the playoffs, I doubt. But I mean, I think out of the, you know, I don't think they're definitely not going to be the worst team in the league. And I think they'll have a solid season rather than spectacular.
Jonathan, Tom, three words to describe the return of Walter Erviti
to Mexican,
Mexican soccer. Three words.
Who is that?
That's the best answer. Yeah.
Yeah, I can't top that. I can't top that one.
One of the guys, yeah.
Should be fun. See what he does and stuff, and It's always interesting when players come in to Mexico, even though, you know, it's not for the first time, you know, to see how they adapt and stuff like that. And there's quite a few players like that, you know, Mauro Boselli over at León. I think he's going to be a really good player coming from Palermo. Pavon up at Monterrey, you know, all these players.
And maybe Vicente Sanchez again.
Yeah, I mean, rumours going around about it. Just, I think it's always... and who's the one at Guido at Pizarro? Guido Pizarro at Tigres, you know. So it's always interesting when these players come in and, you know, it's going to be... You know, it's always one of the things to look out for, isn't it? What the new foreigners can do.
One thing you can be assured of with Walter Erviti, he's going to run and run and run. Maybe
I'll tell you what.
Pointlessly, I mean, but he'll run.
I'm a Boca fan, and he was actually one of the. I mean, there was not much to say about that team this past season, but he was definitely one of the more. He was one of the hardest working players.
Yeah.
Starters.
No, yeah. No. I mean.
That's about it. Though.
Yeah. Yeah. He'd run around.
You know what? I'm glad he was able to find a way to get out of Boca, start fresh.
He's going
about,
to Atlanta.
About three years ago, I gave up on my dream of seeing Riquelme at America.
Oh, that would have been sweet.
You want him? You can go get him.
No, that was about 3 years ago. I gave that up.
Oh, okay.
Well, I mean, yeah, and you had to settle for Rolfi Montenegro, so.
Oh God.
Yeah. So yeah, that yeah feels yeah that
yeah
yeah.
Some fans in Argentina gave him the nickname of Rolfi Montenegro.
Yeah, you know what's funny? He leaves America and he goes and gets relegated in Argentina, and America become champions.
Well, that's what you expect. Come on, what'd you expect? You expected him to win a title for you? Don't say yes, please.
Well, he wasn't as washed up as he is now. I mean, that was what 3-4 years ago. All the talk was that he still had some gas in the tank, if you will, and it didn't work out.
They put diesel in an unleaded tank, man, because he really was messed up, man. He was not working. I mean, that, to me, he was just messed up because it just wasn't. He wasn't hacking it in Mexico or in Argentina, for that matter. Because
let me ask Tom and Johnny, what player do you see kind of breaking out, becoming kind of a new star in the Liga MX for this upcoming season?
New star? I mean, I'm really excited to see Pavon. I know he's not exactly the new, but I think he's really going to be... I mean, him and Suazo up front for Monterrey, I just think it's, you know, it could be absolutely, you know, ridiculously good. So I'm looking forward to probably to him more than anybody, to be honest. I don't know, what about you, Johnny?
For me, well, Club America is my one true love. The local team here in Tijuana, Tijuana San Diego, I believe Fidel Martinez is going to have a good season. This is going to be his third season in the Mexican League. He's now going to be stepping out of Duvier Riasco's shadow. And I think he's going to kind of be the face of the Tijuana team this season.
Mm. All right. Didn't they call him the Panamanian Neymar? Because
no,
of that hairdo back in the day?
That Ecuadorian Neymar. But that, you know, that name is slowly fading away here in Tijuana. You know, he's starting to kind of build his own football, be his own player.
Yeah, it was more because of the haircut more than anything else. Kind of
right,
like
the haircut, right?
Yeah, exactly. And actually, Tom, going back to what you just said about Dorlan Pavon, that was my next question, and it was coming from Mauricio Luna, who sent it to us via Twitter, and he pretty much answered it. I mean, you know, Dorlan Pavon has just been dynamite. You know, in Italy he's had his moments. In Spain with Betis, he was pretty much one of the key stars for Betis. Now in Monterrey, he's going to be one of those players that, I mean, the Mexican fans are going to want to watch him week in and week out.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
Juan is a huge fan of him because he's from Atlético Nacional. So, you know, Juan,
of course, he
can't do no wrong in Juan's eyes, just so y'all know.
No, trust me. When he was on the national team and when he was hitting free kicks into, like, row double X, I was pissed off.
Yeah, no, I remember the, the Copa Libertadores, what was it, 2 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
When that the national team was just ridiculous, scoring like a ridiculous amount of goals in like the group stage, and he was, you know, he scored most of them, didn't he?
Yeah.
And even then, it was like somebody, you know, some Mexican club needs to pick this guy up. And, you know, I know that in you know, it's not all gone to plan in Europe. But it was pretty interesting over the last few months. So there's a lot of stuff in the Mexican press where Monterrey signed him 6 months ago. But, you know, then they loaned him to, what was it, Betis, wasn't it? And there were still, like, European clubs, like, saying, oh, no, we want to get him. And so he still had a lot of interest in Europe. And I think it's pretty interesting from, you know, the Mexican league's point of view that they've got a player coming in there who definitely could have carried on in Europe. But, you know, but he's going to be playing in Mexico now. And I think, you know, it's great for the league. And I think, Aldo de Negres left. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Chivas, it's like the biggest thing, you know what I mean? But, I mean, Pabon in Monterrey, I think that makes him even stronger.
I mean, Pabon was absolutely sick, you know, just a year ago, 2 years ago. Even when Nacional last won the title, he was playing alongside Victor Ibarbo, who is over at Cagliari right now. You had a track team on that Nacional side. I mean, guys that were just like, running down the wings like madmen. I mean, just, you know, Usain Bolt type speed on Nacional. So I mean, he's a mad exciting player. I think Mexican fans are gonna love him if they don't, you know, love him already with what he's done in preseason.
Yeah, no, I think I don't know. Just throwing out another team that I really think is gonna do some is León. I think they're gonna be the most exciting team in the league. I think the coach is attack minded, and they've got Loboa, Burbano, Arizala, Bosselli, Luis Montes and Carlos Peña, Elias Hernandez as well. I mean, I just think they've got... I think Rafa Márquez is captain in it as well now, so that's a bit added bit of interest. But I really think León are going to be the team that we saw when they first got promoted, and they're really going to go for it, score a lot of goals, probably give a few away as well. So I think that's definitely one to another team to look out for.
So with León, you expect a lot of 3-2s, 4-3s?
That's what I'm thinking, yeah. I think they're really going to... really going to go for it.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see La Fiera this semester, especially
even though that relegation is, or avoiding relegation is still their main priority. You still think that they'll be the more entertaining side?
Yeah, I think just because
their average is mid table, something like that, right?
Yeah, yeah, but I mean, just because they've got, like, even if they do fail this season, they'd still have another one to pull it around. So I think that, you know, that takes the immediate pressure off anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I think it does, and with the firepower they have, and if
they could always buy another team back, anyways.
Of course,
slim.
No, it is we could probably do that too. We can just go and buy a team and put it in first division. No big deal, right?
Yeah, we have to save up a lot of money for that.
Yeah,
but,
just like it's no big deal for a PSG's owner to dish out 250 million euros in the event that Barcelona wants to. Thiago Silva.
Oh, come on, I mean that's lunch money for us. Come on.
Yeah.
Listen, if Barcelona gets Thiago Silva, and PSG's owner dishes out 250 million euros to get Messi because Barca got Thiago Silva, then I will, and mark my words. If that happens, I will dish out every last penny that I have for the buyout clause of the Mad About Football show. There.
A good 25 cents.
I said it. So.
Okay, well, fine. Well, I'll just give you a pack of bubble gum and it's all good. Okay?
There you go. There
so,
you
Tom,
go.
Tom, tell me. Tom,
you're risking a lot there, Mike. You're risking a lot there.
Yeah, I know. He's really going out on a limb there. Tom, yeah. Johnny, it's been a pleasure to have you on. What do you guys got going on? I know you guys have been covering... Actually, I wanted to talk about El Tri a little bit, but I mean, I don't know if you have time, but we can talk about El Tri and how they're doing in Gold Cup real quick before we go.
Yeah, go for it. Yeah, I mean, it's not the best, is it?
But you see now, that's the whole thing. I don't think they're doing that bad. I mean it's a Mexican B-side.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they've been getting the results. Okay, fine. They lost to Panama, but Panama are playing with their number one side. The U.S. isn't playing with their number one side. I mean, it is what it is right now. I think it's more hysterics on the Mexican media side that are really, in this impending doom and gloom. I don't see it as such. I don't see that there's going to be a problem. To me, the final will still be the U.S. against Mexico, and you know, at that point, just flip a coin and see what happens.
Yeah.
What's the expectations? Are the people expecting them to win 3-0? Are they expecting them to play a certain style? What's not only expect them to win the tournament, but what's the expectations in terms of the performance?
I think it's a mix
other than winning the trophy.
Yeah, it's a bit of both. I mean, you know, the thing is, it's not just, like, you know what Juan was saying, it's not just the fact that this, you know, this Gold Cup hasn't quite worked, you know what I mean? It's come off the back of, you know, World Cup qualification, which has been poor. You know, the Confederations Cup, there was pretty poor. And, you know, and this is like a yet another tournament. And even though it's another team, they've still got the same traits, you know, which must come down at the end of the day to the manager, where it's not quite fluid as it should be. It's not as exciting as a Mexico side, you know, even known for. You know, they're known for a certain amount of technical ability and, you know, even flair, you know, and teamwork more than anything. And I just don't think they're showing that. And I think that's the problem, is that it's that kind of, it's kind of running through all the national teams at the minute. And I think that's why people are worried.
I mean, we had Pavel Pardo on a couple of weeks ago, and he was talking about, you know, the fact that you don't have these character role players, you know, the ones that we're accustomed to seeing on the Mexican national team, the Cuauhtémoc Blancos, the García Aspes, of course, you know, even more recent Rafa Márquez and Luis Hernández, those type of players. You don't have a personality that is very integral in being able to amalgamate, to be able to unify, galvanize a team like Mexico. Is that also an issue, or is it just that Chepo de la Torre is just such a micromanager of little details to even a defect that Mexico's really been hindered?
Yeah, no, we mentioned it on the Mexican Soccer Show, how there is no one player that is going to lead this team. Mm-hmm. There is no leader. Like you said, there's no the guy with the Cuauhtémoc Blanco attitude, the whole put the team on his shoulders and let's carry on forward. That's missing from the team.
That's the case even with the World Cup ace choice side as well, that there's no
I mean, we've been saying this all throughout World Cup qualifiers, all throughout the Confederations Cup, and all throughout the Gold Cup. So it's kind of, so after a while, you got to throw the blame on the coach, because something he's doing wrong. So you have the same mistake in three different squads. That's troubling.
And I think it's the switching around of players, I mean, you know, as well, that has something to do with that. I mean, we've seen he can't seem to decide on his midfield. You know, he can't seem to decide whether to play two up front, one up front. I mean, and he just doesn't seem to have a clear vision, and I think that kind of affects the players as well, and you know, leads to, you know, they're not quite 100% sure about, you know, what they're playing. Like, look at La Volpe, you know, he dropped Cuauhtémoc Blanco. I mean, that's a coach making a really bold decision because he wants to play a certain way. You know, Aguirre at the last World Cup starts with Guillermo Franco. Everybody's just, you know, I mean, the press killing here and him, the fans. Yeah, killing him. But at the end of the day, Aguirre had his plan, and he went for it, and he did it his way, you know what I mean? And I think that's what, not exactly bring back Guillermo Franco, but, you know, I think people want to see a real, like, Chepo really stamp some kind of, like, this is how we're going to play, this is how we're going to do it, and, you know, we're going to play hard, and we're really going to go after it. And I think at the minute, it's kind of like, well, where's this going? Well, you know, people can't see, like, a clear path to, you know, Mexico getting out this rut.
Now, that being said, if we were, if Mexico makes it to the World Cup next year, if Chepo wins the Gold Cup, does that secure his job a year away from the World Cup?
No. I mean, this game against Honduras in the Azteca in September.
But if he wins the Gold Cup, does that secure his job for the World Cup next year?
No.
It's going to probably end up, he's going to probably end up staying in the job, but... Well, I've been saying this for a while now, that he needs to leave, no matter if he could win the Gold Cup, and he still needs to leave, because he's very stubborn to his ways. There's no change of the formation. All of CONCACAF has already figured Chepo out, and that's, you know, that's where the problems are coming from. And he's very confrontational with the press. The most worrying thing I saw was the press conference where someone asked him about his commitment to the obligation of winning the Gold Cup. And he responded with, "I'm not obligated to win anything."
Oh.
He said, "The team is committed to trying to win the Gold Cup. That's about it."
That's pretty much those are like resigning words, you know, kind of like resigning to any pretensions of anything. I mean, saying that's against Mexico.
Well, he's probably just trying to troll the media. I think that's more than anything. But that goes to exactly to Johnny's point that he's confrontational and combative with the media. And, I mean, you can, from what I know of the Mexican press, you just can't win in that situation. The Mexican press is always going to have the advantage because they have the pen, they have the keyboards to put out the stories. So, yeah, that's not good. Yeah, when he says stuff like that, yeah.
But it's also, it's not just that. It's him inventing positions. It's him putting players in the wrong positions. Or is it just me? Are there people that have mentioned that as well?
Yeah, and very stubborn to the players he chooses. Like a guy like Gerardo Torrado needs to be nowhere near the national team. It's actually, it hinders Torrado's reputation, his whole career as a whole, seeing him try and run around in Mexico's midfield. He's very against youth players. He's very reluctant to put in a guy like Hector Herrera, who just got sold to Porto, mm-hmm. instead of Gerardo Torrado.
And, of course, we all know what's going on between him and Carlos Vela. And that leads to my other – there's players that – and I've always said it, there's players out there that are, I guess, important because of their absence. And Carlos Vela is one of them. Also, one that's really been out of the picture, mostly because of injuries, Oribe Peralta. And, boy, does Mexico miss those two players specifically.
Yeah, I mean, I think if Vela does come back, I think he can spark the team into life. I really do. Mm-hmm. I just think the atmosphere, more than on the field, obviously on the field he's going to be vital, but mm-hmm. just the whole atmosphere, I think it'd be all lifted if he came back and, you know, he's good friends with Giovanni. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I think we might see a bit of character, but it's like the elephant in the room every time the squad meets up or the squad's announced, oh, Vela's name's not there. And, you know, really hope that he does come back. But I just want to make a point about,
yeah.
And I know Chepo's been taking a lot of stuff as well, stick, you know, but I think one of the main things is, you know, Mexico coming off this back of winning the gold medal at the Olympics. But I think the players and the Mexican clubs as well have to take some responsibility. And I know we've seen Herrera and Diego Reyes moving to Europe now. But, you know, a lot of the players, Chaton Enriquez was, you know, pretty big things were predicted. Who else? Like, you know, Israel Jimenez, there's a few of them, you know, Ponce. I don't think they've developed as they should in the last year. I don't think they've stepped up. And I think, you know, at club level, Mexico got too many players out of form, and I think Chepo, to some degree, has his hands tied by that.
Another one you can add to that list is Cubo Torres. Especially after the Under-20 World Cup back in 2011, people were talking about Cubo Torres being the next big thing in Mexican football, and he never kind of panned out, from that point on.
Yeah, I think it's a common theme in Mexican football that the we've seen them win the under-17 and stuff like that. It's getting that next step, and I mean, for me personally, it's moving to Europe and moving at an earlier age. But you know, the Mexican clubs want a lot of money. We've seen it with Marco Fabian more than anyone, and he's the main one that should have stepped up. He's undoubtedly highly talented, but you know what? You know, he should have been in Europe 2-3 years ago. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, you know, really experience a different kind of soccer, a different kind of life, rather than like the comfortable living in his hometown, getting paid loads of money. Mm. You know what I mean? I mean, I really think it is a stumbling block for Mexican players that when you look at the South Americas, look at Colombia. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
What percentage of that team is playing in good European.
Well, but the thing is, with a lot of Colombian teams, you're not getting paid. Forget Atlas, and they're owed 1 or 2 months. I mean, there's been players in Colombia that have been owed 8, 9, 10 months worth of salary.
But what he's saying is that the Colombian national team, they are the vast majority of them playing Europe.
Oh yeah, no,
and they're not comfortable. They're not.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they're not settling for being in Colombian clubs.
Oh no, I get that. No, I completely agree with Tom. You're absolutely right, Tom. No, I'm not disagreeing with you at all. I was just throwing. Hey, yeah, but in Colombia, sometimes you know the players that go from Colombia abroad, they're you know a lot of cases is because they you know they're not getting you know the salaries, and it's more about a necessity. But yeah, you're absolutely right, though. You are absolutely right.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you guys, you know. If a coach leaves, you have to have someone to follow. So who do you guys want to see the next coach of Mexico if Chepo de la Torre is let go within the next few months? And who are the press talking about as a successor to Chepo de la Torre?
Well, me personally, I have kind of like the big shocker name. I would put in Tomas Boy. I feel... One, Tomas Boy is available. He doesn't have a job. Right. Two, he's got that fire that's missing from Mexico. You look at Chepo de la Torre, and he's very...
He almost looks very corporate.
Yeah, he's very corporate. He's very calm. He's like... I honestly think he has no idea what to do next. He's so in over his head that he's way out of ideas. And Tomas Boy is totally different. He'd be on that sideline screaming his head off until something happens.
Now, my question to you,
I never
quick.
Thought about Tomas Boy. That one definitely is one I did not think of at all. That's a good one.
It's a very good one.
Yeah, excellent.
And I'll throw you a roadblock here, and I'm kind of like messing with you.
Well, we got to get Tom's. Tom, what is Tom's answer to that question?
Personally, I'd go for Vucetich. I think he's the best Mexican manager out there at the minute. His record proves it. But I mean, you know, I like what Johnny's saying about someone who's going to come in and really shake him up. And I think Miguel Herrera would do that. Although, you know, he plays three central defenders. It'd be a big change, so I'm not sure. But, you know, Bielsa, the press has mentioned. They've even mentioned La Volpe returning. La Volpe's out of work at the minute, and I know he's looking for a job. Through someone who spoke to him recently.
How ironic would that be, especially after the crap that he took while he was national team coach?
Yeah.
I remember in watching all the shows, man. Especially, I happened to be in Mexico right before the 2006 World Cup, and man, they were just lambasting. I mean, they were just killing La Volpe.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, it sometimes you know life has a way of you know its little twists and turns of kind of nipping you in the butt. But Johnny, you'd mentioned Tomas Boy. Would he be the pick of the owners?
Probably not. He's very confrontational. Yeah. He likes to call out the referees' favoritism towards other teams because other teams have money. He doesn't make a lot of friends. He doesn't have a representative. Mm-hmm. So he's kind of out of the loop, the power loop in Mexico. Mm-hmm. So I highly doubt it. That was just my personal opinionated pick for national team head coach.
How fitting if you consider the media in Mexico, right? Such a controversial figure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Talking a lot of smack all the time, you know. For me, media-wise, it's great.
Yeah, he's brilliant. I mean, if you go to one of his press conferences, and he guaranteed to be hilarious, you know what I mean? Like, I've been to a couple of his press conferences, and you just end up just laughing, you know what I mean? You just can't keep a straight face, because he's like, este cabrón, and he's using slang and, like, swearing and stuff.
Nice,
like,
nice. We need more of that here in MLS, yeah. Man.
Him and Tuca Ferretti.
Yeah, Tuca Ferretti. Yeah, we need more of that here in MLS, and we had it for a couple of months until Chelis got sacked. Speaking of Chelis, what's up with Puebla? Did they already hire a new coach? Because they were talking about Chelis coming back to Puebla for a fourth stint, or quote-unquote, with that team.
Yeah, I think La Puente's going to start the season. But, I mean, you know, who knows? Puebla's one of those clubs that's just so topsy-turvy, just all over the place. You know, it wouldn't surprise me, you know, if just some random change came. But I think it all depends on how they start the season. If his first four or five games don't go well, I think he will get fired because they finished pretty badly last season, if I remember rightly. So, you know, I don't think they're going to... I don't think he's got too much time if he doesn't start well.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. Gentlemen, again, I don't want to take more of your time. We've been speaking for quite a bit now. And, of course, it's always fun to talk Mexican football with you guys. What do you guys got going on the show in the next couple of weeks?
Well, we just released our season preview. We did a team-by-team preview, all under an hour, which was surprisingly.
Wow.
But,
okay, but other than that, that's what I like. You guys are a little bit more to the point than we are. We kind of like, you know, go all over the place. You know, we take the longest route to
Well, tonight's show, we went, 15, 20 minutes talking about the lifestyle on South Beach before we actually started talking about some soccer-related issues.
You got a point, So, I mean, but that's good. And you got that going on. What else is going on?
Well, we're going to continue talking about Mexico and the Gold Cup and also the start of the new season. That's going to be a lot of things are going to be happening. Teams are not going to be playing the way they're going to be playing in midway or in the later part of the season. So a lot of interesting things will come up for us to discuss.
Well, and where can we follow you guys?
The show is at Mex Soccer Show. Also the Facebook, facebook.com/Mexican Soccer Show. For me personally, it's Johnny Rico, J-O-N-Y-R-I-C-O.
And what about you, Tom?
Yeah, it's at Mexico World Cup. So yeah, you can follow me on Twitter there.
Yeah, guys, I definitely recommend this show for anyone that is interested to knowing more about Mexican football. Pretty much I listen to these guys, and I know I think I know about Mexican football, but I really don't. And, you know, it's a pleasure. And look, Tom, tell the guys in Mexico not to worry. Mexico's going to be in the World Cup. It's not a big deal. Don't worry. They get too hysterical over there. I mean, you know, you watch the shows here in the U.S., and you're like, what are they so worried about? They're going to get to the World Cup. It's Mexico. It's the U.S. They always go.
Yeah. Tell just like England, though.
I'm one of those hystericals.
Yeah, man. I mean, relax. You guys are in CONCACAF. You guys will get through. I mean, you know, Costa Rica's not better than you. Honduras is not better than you. And, you know, as far as the U.S. and Mexico, well, depends on where you get them, what day they end up meeting, one day meet the other.
If you play in the snow, things like that. Yeah,
if you play in the snow or if you play, you know, up in the mountains and stuff, that's different. You know, whatever.
One would think Mexico would beat Jamaica at the Estadio Azteca, but that didn't happen.
Ah, it happens.
Blah!
Oh, here we go. Here we go.
Gentlemen,
more fire.
What's the name of the, what's your Facebook page again? Can you say that one again?
Facebook.com/Mexican Soccer Show.
Okay.
Perfect. So, gentlemen, again, thank you so much for joining us. And, well, come on whenever you want, man. Actually, we'll have a couple of Google Hangouts with you so you can just, you know, talk. And probably we'll see if I can get some Chivas fans whenever the Clásico comes around so Johnny can talk some smack.
Yeah,
come on. That's got to be lots of fun.
Yeah.
Tom's like, no, trust me, it's not.
If you find any Chivas fans out there, which right now they're probably all in hiding, tell them to, we'll have them on as a special guest on the Mexican Soccer Show because the show is just full of anti-Chivas. Tom is an Atlas fan and the rest of the crew is an America fan.
Oh, man, that would be nice. You know what? That's going to be our mission from here on out, to try and get some Chivas fans on your show just to give you guys a hard time. <That's> All right, guys, thank you so much, Matt, for joining us. Mike, George, it's been a pleasure to be able to hang out with you for so long. A little bit too long maybe for my taste, but it's still all good. Again, it's a pleasure to be able to speak to Tom as well as Johnny as always. And everyone, you can check us out on Facebook over at facebook.com/TheMadAboutFootballShow. Check us out on Twitter at our official show handle, which is MadAboutFootball. George, what can we find you?
At GDMatellis8. That's my Twitter handle.
What about you, Mike?
You can find me at Deportes_Lopez.
Perfect. And also, big shout out to the guys over at Soccer Pro. Our boy Matt left to Ireland. Shout out to him. But we also will be talking to Tisa from here on out. Shout out to Tisa and the gang over at Soccer Pro. And they'll be able to talk about and offer you the best possible offers when it comes to football garb and all that type of stuff. Go check them out at soccerpro.com, at Soccer Pro over on Twitter. So, on behalf of everyone that was here, Johnny and Tom, as well as George and Mike. Well, my name is Juan. I'll talk to you soon. Peace.